Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in.
So of course, with Laura being a gymnast, Jen and her really bond over that. But also, she's somebody who just loves the barefoot life and kind of preaches this style of barefoot living. And we talk a bit more into the research that she's specifically done. But of course, Jen and I always are advocates of Vivo barefoot shoes. And if you haven't been able to try a pair of Vivos yet to just feel what your feet can do inside them and how much space they have to move and do what they're naturally meant to do, go check the link in the show notes and use our code TOB15 to get yourself a 15% discount on a pair of Vivo barefoot shoes. Again, there's a 100-day risk-free trial where you can try these things out, and if they aren't absolutely for you, just send them back and you'll get a full refund. No questions asked. Go get the link in the show notes.
There's been a code change. Use code OPTIMAL now at checkout to get that 15% off. The code is OPTIMAL.
And now let's get talking to Laura. Excited for this episode to be interviewing one of our own, another physical therapist. Dr. Laura Cummerly is a physical therapist who graduated with her DPT in 2018 and then went on to complete her orthopedic residency in 2019 to become an orthopedic clinical specialist. Her movement background comes from gymnastics, but combines lifting, calisthenics, and hand balancing to create a unique method of multiple disciplines kind of blended together. In addition to treating patients in the clinic, Laura performs online training to help bridge the gap between the traditional physical therapy model and returning to an active lifestyle. Her focus is on optimizing movement patterns, skill development, and mobility to improve performance and reduce the risk of injury in training. So we just love this conversation with Laura. We're always about any PT who's trying to bridge that gap back to optimal performance. If you go check out her Instagram right now at Paradigm of Perfection, you'll be able to see just how great of a mover she is, especially if you're someone who wants to continue to optimize movement in your own body. Let's head into the interview.
Laura, thank you so much for being here. I'm just really excited to be able to have another PT, one moves very similarly to me, because I think I know you have a gymnastics background, but also just like in terms of your mindset and how you're teaching people and how you're encouraging people to move more. It's definitely along the same realms of Dom and I, and I know the conversation we're going to dive into is just going to help to open that passageway for people even more. So anyways, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited for this conversation as well.
So first, I just want to ask about where that initial passion comes from with movement. I know Jen just kind of alluded to you having maybe a gymnastics background. Is that what initially made you interested in going into physical therapy?
Yes, definitely. So I did gymnastics from when I was 4 to 21. And I just always, I fell in love with how the body moves, the musculoskeletal system and all of that. And that's kind of what spurred the interest in that. And then I just kind of found PT by researching careers that involved that and kind of fell into PT.
Did you go through physical therapy as a gymnast?
I actually did not. I was very lucky with injuries.
Wow.
I actually didn't either, which is so funny too, to, you know, be in the fields we are in now. But you must have done it in college as well then, right?
Yes.
And no physical therapy?
No physical therapy. Wow. I mean, I did have like some broken bones and things like that, but nothing that required PT.
Just a few broken bones. No biggie.
That's pretty impressive. How do you think that, do you see that as changing now? Because I felt like when I was a gymnast, at least, it wasn't really pushed or promoted to go to physical therapy a lot. But I know now that I've been working in once I started even working as an aide, I feel like I saw a lot younger generations in high school and in high school sports starting to open up to physical therapy more, and their coaches would start to recommend it a little bit earlier rather than, you know, later in the injury process. Do you find that has changed now? And maybe that's the reason you didn't have therapy?
It's possible. I definitely think that physical therapy as a profession is growing. And so people are more likely to know what it is now than back then. I did have teammates back then who did go to PT, which was more so when I was like in high school and later on. But earlier on, like I honestly didn't even know what PT was, what it entailed. So it's just interesting, I guess, like as I think the physical therapy field grows, I think it'll be more common.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
So one thing that I kind of wanted to ask about was even your Instagram handle, which if anyone's listening, you can go look her up right now. She's at Paradigm of Perfection. All sorts of amazing progressions in different types of exercises. But where does that name come from? Because I know that in gymnastics, you're always trying to achieve perfection. And I think when it comes to movement, there's always this mindset that there's one perfect way to do something. Where can I ask just kind of where the background of that name comes from?
Yeah. So I honestly started the page as just like a place to post my workouts as a little bit of accountability. I pretty much struggled with perfectionism and like just always trying to be perfect. And I kind of was just like, what is perfect is not being perfect and just trying to improve and doing the best that you can. And that's all that you can ask from yourself. And so it's just changing like the paradigm of what perfection is to being imperfect and just doing what you can. So that's more so where the name came from.
I love that. I mean, as a former gymnast, 100%, I can relate to that and changing that conversation of what it looks like within the body. And I know that now also with this page and what you've been able to do to inspire so many, as I'm sure you have so many people reaching out wanting to learn personally from you, how has that changed working in person in, you know, versus online? And what, I guess I'm asking kind of, what could the journey of what someone's expectation of physical therapy be coming into a clinic versus reaching out to a physical therapist online?
Yeah, so a physical therapist online is most likely licensed only in the state that they practice. So they can't necessarily provide physical therapy services across state lines. So it's going to be more general advice or more like focused on performance or something like that versus a specific like diagnosis or injury. If you're going into the clinic, then they're treating and providing medical advice. So it's going to be a little bit more direct. They can do manual therapy in person, which can be beneficial in addition to exercise. If they're just doing like passive treatment and things like that, like massage or joint mobilizations or things like that, then I would say you would benefit from exercise in addition to that, but it can be beneficial together. So that there's definitely some differences there.
I think that you point out something that's awesome that a lot of physical therapists, you know, can take advantage of in this online platform. But I feel like a lot of PTs kind of see that as a limiting factor sometimes where they're like, oh, when I go online, I can't diagnose or I can't act like I'm treating a specific diagnosis when in reality, it's just fudging language. And it's just a matter of how we talk about the pain point and how we talk, oh, you just have some discomfort and limited range of motion around the hip, rather than calling it a bursitis or a hip impingement or a labral tear or whatever the diagnosis is they may be working with. Do you think that this can be an opportunity where we can open up a bit in PT as to how we practice and how we reach people online?
I mean, I definitely think that would be beneficial just for the general public. I feel like we are kind of isolated in the clinic with a limited model. And if we can expand that, we can definitely help a lot more people, which I know as physical therapists, our goal is to help people move better, feel better, be able to live better. So I definitely think that would be beneficial if we can expand a little bit more.
Do you feel like within who you see in person right now within the clinic, you're able to take them as far as you would like to within the journey of getting them back into full movement or performance goals? Or do you feel like that's limited? You look at it kind of separate as fitness performance online versus what you can do in person?
I definitely view it as a bit separate. If you're dealing with someone in person, they're typically referred to you by their physician and their goals may not necessarily be returning back to a sport or just general fitness. It might be like getting out of a chair or things like that, just basic life things. And so they might not be interested in that performance side of things or the general training or like the lifestyle changes. Whereas online, I feel like people are more open to those types of things, more interested in the performance side of things. And then also like in person, you do have to deal with insurance limitations and things like that, which can be a struggle.
So I think that a lot of people will listen, and I've heard this before, whether even from family members, where they'll just say, oh, I've tried PT out and that didn't work for me. What would you say to somebody who's listening and they're just like, oh, I've tried PT and it didn't work?
It really depends on the therapist, I would say. So just like with other health providers, so like if you think about like a psychologist or something like that, a lot of people will say like, try a couple, see which one fits. Same thing with physical therapy. Your goals kind of have to align. They have to understand your lifestyle, what your goals are. And a lot of therapists are trained in different ways. So one may have like an orthopedic specialization. Another one might have like a pelvic floor specialization and have different like education, which can lead to a different conclusion and may or may not be relevant. So just depending on, they'll assess you differently essentially and potentially come to a different conclusion. Overall base training is similar, but the specialty training can definitely play a role too.
Definitely. Do you feel like when you're seeing clients in person, you're able to guide and be open to things like maybe changing their shoes that they're wearing or opening up to, well, what would it look like to add more training into the picture or add more exercise into the life? Like, do you feel like people are open to those types of suggestions in person?
It really depends on the person. I would probably say the majority of people not, but there are the select couple that are, which is really exciting when you do get that chance.
Yeah, definitely. Because I mean, that can make such a big impact, and we are still doing exercise in person, right? So it's like, well, I see you coming in with your super thick shoes. What if we did try something a little bit different? Like, first of all, can we just talk about that? Can we talk about the difference in shoes? And in particular, just if someone's walking around, like what is the difference between walking in a more barefoot shoe versus more like a conventional running shoe?
I mean, you're a gymnast, so I know you love being barefoot.
Yes, I definitely am completely biased towards being barefoot just because of that history. Like I walked around in the neighborhood barefoot growing up. But comparing the minimalistic style shoe versus a conventional shoe, there's definitely a difference in the heel drop, which is basically the difference from like the heel height to the toe. So you almost have a little bit of a wedge in a conventional shoe. And then the arch support is also going to differ, and the flexibility of the shoe too. And then it's also going to be a weight difference. So the minimalist shoe is going to be lighter and then a heavier conventional shoe, which will change your like step characteristics and change the way that you're walking. And then also like the toe box, which will, a wider toe box in the minimalist style shoe will allow your feet to spread more, which is more natural position of the foot.
So how do you explain this to somebody who comes in and they say, okay, but I've had a podiatrist or a doctor whoever tell me that I need arch support. So I need this shoe with arch support, and my heel hits the ground too hard. So I need to have this cushioned, elevated heel, and I can't get into a full squat. So they've told me that I need to have this thing with a heel elevated as well, because that will help me squat better. How do you kind of help people unwind that in their mind after, maybe from other resources or other professionals, they've been told something else?
So I would definitely say, like, it's possible at that point in time they might have needed additional support to allow tissues to heal and things like that. But to return to like functioning better, having the appropriate range of motion and strength and ability of the foot to function, a flatter, more like minimalist style shoe, progressing towards that can improve like foot strength, allow you to use the like more range of motion in squatting and things like that. So yeah, at one point we might have needed that, but working towards that, so we don't need to depend on it. It's like similar when you have an injury and you take pain medication, you don't necessarily want to have to take pain medication for forever. So addressing the actual cause of the issue versus like the Band-Aid approach.
Or if you are taking pain medication, you don't just stop cold turkey. there's a process of titrating off of that or changing the behavior of how we manage that input the same way with shoes. You don't just completely switch over. I mean, we are also complete barefoot junkies. So we love the barefoot talk, but that's what everyone says. Oh, I tried barefoot shoes and my feet were just hurting after one day of wearing them. So I went back to my old shoes because they hurt my feet. So what would you tell somebody if they came back to you and were like, yeah, I tried barefoot shoes and my feet were barking and it flared up my plantar fasciitis. So I went back to my old shoes.
Yeah. So there's definitely a progression towards wearing the minimalist style shoes or going barefoot, just because your feet aren't necessarily adapted to that stimulus. So just like if you haven't been working out and then all of a sudden you go working out like 5 days a week, an hour long each session, that is a lot for your body to transition. So easing into it can help minimize those effects and help you overall then become stronger and be able to move better.
Definitely. And I know like you have entire articles, which we're definitely going to link in the show notes for people to be able to check out, because I love that you kind of break down each section as well. You talk about, you know, just the difference in conventional shoes versus barefoot. Then you talk about, well, what does it mean if you wanted to start running in barefoot? What does that transition look like? What does it mean if you want to start lifting a little bit more? And you break down, you do such a great job, I got to say, Laura, too, of breaking down, here's what the current research is saying, and here's what even some conflicting research is saying, which is why we don't have all the answers. And I think that's okay to admit as well. You know, there's so much controversy on things where it's this or that. And sometimes it's we don't know yet. We don't have all of the answers, right?
Yeah, I definitely thought it was very interesting because what you hear was more like, oh, it improves like foot strength. It can do all of these things. But then you look at the research and it's like, it's possible that it does that. But there's a lot of conflicting research as well. And basically the conclusion that I came to was just be your own test subject, be smart about transitioning, go ahead and try it. And it's not necessarily you would benefit from exclusively using like a barefoot style shoe, but it might be a combination that mm-hmm. you find is best for your body too.
Have you found that you yourself use a combination at all? Like, or have you transitioned fully over where you can run in bare feet and you feel great, or in the barefoot minimalist style shoe?
I personally do a combination as of right now. I do have a history of foot fractures. Mm-hmm. And so I'm kind of still weaning over toward and going just very slow with it. So depending like on the surface that I run on, I'll change my shoe type, or depending on the duration or things like that. And if I'm like going to be on my feet for a really long time, I might wear a little bit more supportive shoe if I'm especially more fatigued that day. But there are days when I'm like, no, I want to wear, like, I just feel like I have more energy when I'm wearing the minimal style shoes and I'm able to like move around the clinic a little bit better and things like that. So I personally like it. But then if I'm extra fatigued, if my like muscles are already tired, I might just go to a little bit more supportive shoe for that day.
That's, I think, the hardest thing, is because I get so many questions the moment that I talk about minimalist shoes, or I love wearing them and I can tolerate them for long periods of time. However, I get a lot of questions, say nursing, you're on your feet a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, all day long, you're standing, charting, you're walking around to different patients, you're going to different floors. So what do you kind of recommend in that kind of sense?
It would definitely depend on the person. Like I know someone who works on concrete all day, and I talked to him last week and he was doing like 10-hour days and he wears minimalist style shoes and he's completely fine with it and he feels great. It really depends more so on what your foot is used to and your individual experience. I would say go ahead and like maybe try a minimalist style shoe like on an off day that you're not up on your feet as much and start there, even if it's just like half the day. And then maybe if you feel good, maybe go like a full off day. And then once we've tolerated that and can transition that, then potentially try, if you have a second, like during your lunch, to like switch shoes try like the barefoot style shoe in the morning and then change into your normal shoe and just slowly progress that depending on how your body tolerates.
So I know that I've seen you use the word movement or the phrase movement diet as well. And I'm wondering like how you explain that to people, talk about how you need to have a balance of movement or this movement diet in your life. Like, how would you explain that to patients or clients of yours?
Yeah. So just like with your nutritional diet, you don't necessarily want to have the same food all the time because then you're going to miss out on important nutrients, right? Mm-hmm. So the same thing with your movement. If you're moving in the same pattern, if you're stuck in the same position, that's your body's going to be lacking something. So creating some variety in how you're moving, like if you're sitting at your computer all day, maybe doing some like extension or leaning back or reaching overhead, a little bit more of those types of movements because we're lacking it elsewhere.
No, that's a really good example. Just and broadening the aspect of that, because all too often, and I get it, you know, it's finding the time, the discipline, the motivation to even start to move. So then you have to say, oh, I have to add in all these different types of movement now. Like, how do you start to guide people into being able to open up that their scope of movement and start to adapt different movement diets?
So it's really just starting and seeing what they enjoy doing, what they're passionate about doing. Like what sports did they play growing up? What did they enjoy doing that was active growing up? Potentially tapping into those types of things and finding something that they want to do just to get them moving a little bit, whether it's just like playing some music and dancing for a song or something like that. Getting some sort of movement in, and then we can build off of that. It doesn't necessarily need to be a huge drastic change, and it doesn't have to look like a traditional gym workout or anything like that. It can be a number of different things just to get you moving and feel a little bit better in your body.
I think I went through this a lot when I was coming out of, because I played college football for a smaller college, and you know, my workouts were almost exclusively in the weight room, lifting weights, doing different types of Olympic lifts, you know, sometimes outside doing running drills and stuff. But I just got so fatigued on that one form of exercise in my diet that now I crave anything novel and anything new. And I'm always looking for different things to do every day. So sometimes I think I need to go to the opposite direction and get into a more consistent diet myself, because I just am all over the place when I do my own personal exercise.
Yeah. And sometimes like there's definitely an area where we can like work towards structure and things like that, just because, I mean, there are the principles of like progressive overload and things like that, that you need to do something consistent over time to build those results. But it really depends on your goals and what you're looking to try to do, because it can be structured in different ways, essentially.
If someone's just trying to start to get rid of general aches and pains, are there ways that we can start to add exercise in to reduce risk of injury? Like, do we have concrete studies? I think that's like the hardest part, right? What is the thing that reduces the risk of injury?
I honestly am not sure about the evidence on that, but I would assume just getting yourself moving better. So if we're a little bit stiffer in a certain range, being able to have the full range of motion of like a specific joint or like improve the flexibility of a muscle. So, I don't know, you can like reach overhead to grab something from your cabinet. Little things like that, addressing essentially how you're moving. And so like if you're limited in shoulder range of motion and you can't necessarily reach overhead into the cabinet or easily, or it puts a little bit more stress on your shoulder because like a muscle is tight or something like that, addressing that specific issue to move better and then reduce an injury from like your shoulder in that example.
So what's a great place for someone to start? Because I think, you know, the first step is becoming aware or finding those places where you're stiff or you might need a little more flexibility, or, you know, people have pain in their back, but they don't actually know that the issue is that they have really tight hips and ankles, you know? So like, what's a good place for someone to start finding those places?
So it depends on their interest level and things like that. I would say if you're really interested, you could do some sort of like self-assessment. I know there are programs out there like the Optimal Body that does that. And then there are also, if you want a little bit more guidance, There are people out there that do individualized assessments like I offer. If you wanted to improve, like let's say a squat, we could do like a movement screen and then address those issues to help improve your squatting mechanics. So things like that can be done depending on how much guidance you're looking for.
And how often do you think that someone realistically needs on a day-to-day basis to start to improve mobility and range of motion? Like, are you giving people hour-long routines? Is it something like, how do we start to create better transfer into people's day to maintain this consistency? What is it that, how do you approach it?
I mean, I always say something is better than nothing. So it really depends on their current schedule. I mean, if they're like really busy, don't have much time, I mean, even just like 3 to 5 exercises anywhere spaced throughout the day can be beneficial. Or if they're looking for like a longer program more consistently, it really depends on what that person's looking for, what they can fit in their life. Because I want them to do something, anything to create that change that they're looking for. And I want to help support them along that journey. So it's really tailored to that person.
Yeah, that's huge.
What would you say is the easiest way for someone to, like someone who's getting into movement, starting to, you know, want to find their movement diet or what exercise practice is best for them? How can people like differentiate between soreness or a pain that's actually like, okay, I overdid it and I did, you know, my knees talking to me versus just general soreness because I haven't done this in a while?
So general soreness, I would say, would ease up in like a couple days. If it's lasting a little bit longer than that, then I would be a little bit more cautious. Potentially, if it's like a week or so, I would say we might have done a little bit too much. Potentially get an assessment if it's not improving, or get a little bit more guidance when you do return to that once that does clear up. But typically, like a soreness kind of thing, 2 to 3 days max with that. But again, it's going to depend on a number of different factors like hydration and things like that. So,
I mean, I love that you bring up even being able to get these other recovery practices in. And I think that's neglected a lot of times, especially in just thinking of physical therapy. We think it's the physical. It's what I, how I move my body. It's what I do with my body. But we're not always implementing these other factors of, are you drinking water? Are you sleeping? What are some of those other practices that you really advise people to start looking at as well to help in either improving range of motion or reducing risk of injury?
Improving range of motion, there can be a number of different things. It could be more stretching. It can be more like focus on joint. It could be potential nerve, things like that. And giving them exercises based on that, just getting them moving. And other factors, I mean, just looking at the basics of just like general health. So like hydration, like is your diet balanced, or are we eating a lot of foods that can cause like increased water retention, inflammation, things like that. Getting enough sleep, managing stress, things like that are going to affect your pain experience as well.
So on the average day, what would you recommend as far as drinking water? When we say, are you drinking enough water? How does somebody know?
Honestly, I have like looked into this and I can't, it's really dependent on the person. I haven't found like a set number or anything like that. I would probably use like urine color as an example. And there are like charts that you can find online that you can look at the color and you can compare and to see if you're drinking enough water.
Yeah, definitely don't want it to be dark.
I remember we had our athletic trainer in football would always say, you want to be peeing lemonade. And he had this funny, you know, voice that we always tried to mimic, but I won't put you guys through that pain and torture right now. But he'd say like, you want to be peeing lemonade, maybe not quite pure water. Said, but if it gets to apple juice, you should be concerned. And if you start peeing Diet Coke, come and see me.
Oh my gosh. That's crazy.
Some people, I mean, literally, if you get to that point where you might start getting rhabdo or something like that, your pee will get so dark that, you know, we had one kid who threw a bout of rhabdo and his pee was, you know, darker than apple juice. So can be kind of concerning.
I like that guy. That's a good quick guide.
Yeah.
How funny.
No doubt.
What are some other ways that people really just listening right now, if they're like, I just want to overall start to reduce my risk of injury. I know getting assessed by you and just checking out movement patterns, I think is one of the best things that people can do. And people ask me all the time, are you taking people personally? And I'm not right now because we're focused on our app, which hopefully one day will come out.
Go join the waitlist.
However, getting assessed by you, Laura, I think that is so incredibly powerful. And I don't think people understand the value of, even if I don't have injury right now, just understanding how I'm moving to start to bring that awareness into my life is something that can drastically change the way someone even feels without even knowing it. I mean, it's just, are there other practices and things that you recommend?
Really, just getting started moving, you can do a little bit of an assessment yourself and do my arms go all the way overhead? If can I hug my knee towards my chest without any sort of pinching or crazy pulling in the back or anything like that? Doing these motions can help you assess where you need to focus a little bit more on. So my hips are a little bit tight. Okay, maybe I need to do a little bit more hip stretching, maybe some more deep squatting, things like that, and just kind of experiment and see what works as well. But definitely, I agree that an assessment can be very beneficial. And if you find the right person doing it, they can educate you on all of these things that can contribute. And then ideally long term, then you can continue that independently and you don't necessarily always need to be coming back to that person.
That's
cool. Yeah. I think it's so important for people to hear that though, because I know a lot of people might be sitting out there and saying it's so easy to just say, just start. But you have no idea how many people will message Jen, or I'm sure message you, Laura, or leave comments and say wow, I tried this and it made my pain go away, or it helped me, understand more about my back or my hips than I have in a long time. So it's a matter of continuing to try and have that resilience to say, okay, I've tried 5 things that haven't worked. Maybe it's the 6th that's suddenly going to click and help you understand your body or your pain in a completely different way.
Yeah, definitely.
And you have just so much content as well that people can start to, I know sometimes people might get intimidated. Don't get intimidated. She is really strong, but just seeing you post some mobility things, you post strength things, you show and you give examples of how people can start exploring within their body today. And I think that is the most empowering thing that us as clinicians can continue to do, is to show up and to show people what's possible. And Laura, you do this on a daily basis. Every time I see your videos, I'm always impressed, one, with your discipline and consistency within your own body, but your willingness to show it and provide that support for other people.
Thank you.
So where could people go if they had interest in getting a self-assessment from you or finding any of the information or programs that you have? I know that we mentioned your Instagram is Paradigm of Perfection, but is there anywhere else people should go to check you out?
Yes. My website is also paradigmofperfection.com, and you can go on there to find all of my products and services and learn a little bit more about those consult calls for the assessments, or go ahead and you can read the blogs on the minimalist style shoes. And all of those details there.
Yeah. And we're definitely, again, I'm going to link up all of those blogs that you shared with us, because I read through them myself and I was impressed in terms of just being able to, you even drop little charts sometimes. Here's what the benefit is of, minimalist versus conventional. Here's what it says in terms of what, you do such a great job in breaking it down from deadlifting and squatting to how often we should be transitioning. How many weeks does it take to transition? I mean, you drop a lot of education in those, and it in an easy to digest manner as well. So anyone who's thinking and has been on the path of seeing probably your posts, our posts of all the minimalist shoes is now going to start to have that understanding and better education and guidance. So thank you for creating those.
Yeah, no problem. It was very interesting to learn a little bit more about what the research actually said, because what you hear is a little bit different than what the research shows. And it has all the risk factors and things like that. And also when to take it a little bit slower with those transitions based on those risk factors and things like that. But it does give plenty of baseline information, increasing 5% a week in mileage, for example, is a good starting place. But depending on your risk factor history and things like that, it'll have all that information in the blog.
That's amazing. We'll have that linked up down below. And Laura, thanks so much for taking the time to come on and spread some of your knowledge to us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to listen to another interview with yet another incredible person helping us understand that movement just a little bit better in our own body. If you love this episode, please consider sharing it out with somebody, maybe subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform, and even leave a rating and review. All of those things are going to help support us and get this podcast out to just that many more people. You can also support us by going and buying our new Optimal Body To Go kit. This is a kit filled with all of the tools that Jen and I love using with clients and patients to help them strengthen and mobilize their body and find their optimal body. If you search portable home therapy equipment, it will be one of the top listings. And for a limited time only, this is the last week to get 25% off using code OPTIMAL25. So go check that out. And of course, we will see you the next time on the Optimal Body Podcast.